If you could indulge me a little bit, I just want to share some thoughts about the Levaya that many of us just watched. First of all, I want to apologize because someone asked on the chat if we're not attending in person anyway, should we just listen to the recordings later? And my gut reaction was that even though the Gemara tells us in Maseches Ksuvos that Laman D'Masni in Loshir, that there's never enough people at a Levaya for someone who taught Torah. For someone who learned Torah, the Gemara says that unless there's Shishim Ribo people, unless there are 600,000 people, you're supposed to go to give Kavod Achron, because K'shem Shenisinasa B'Shishim Ribo, Kach Netilasa B'Shishim Ribo. It's only appropriate that if the Torah was given B'Shishim Ribo, it should be taken with Shishim Ribo. But the Gemara says that if it's someone who taught Torah, then there's no shear whatsoever. So obviously there were less than Shishim Ribo, and anyway, Rav David was a posek for all of Klal Yisrael. But I thought that if you're on Zoom anyway, you're not really attending, and therefore I thought perhaps that same would not apply as far as being Mevatel Torah. And that, combined with the fact that Rav Shechter used to tell us that Rav Soloveitchik used to tell the Talmidim that just like the Gemara says, you're not Mevatel Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban for Levayas HaMeis. So nowadays, anyone who still needs some guidance in learning is still called Tinoko Shel Beis Rabban. And Rav Soloveitchik thought that that applied to the guys in his shir, who were essentially you guys, the guys that were the highest level guys in the yeshiva. So I erroneously said, okay, you could just listen to it later, meaning better to keep morning Seder. By the time I got the word back from Rav Shechter, Rav Shechter said that that was not correct, that much better would be to participate in the Levaya, even in the live stream. He thought that that was the right thing to do under the circumstance. I didn't yet get a chance to talk to him about why, about what the Svara was necessarily, but that's what he thought. So I apologize if anyone did not participate in the Levaya because of my guidance. But I did want to share some impressions, hachayitena libo kind of things, because a lot of times, you listen to a lot of hespedim. Some are more articulate than others. Some are maybe more emotional and hard to see through. Sometimes something is very subtle, and you don't necessarily pick up on just the power of a message. In our yeshiva, we're used to hearing very polished kind of hespedim, where people are well thought out and every word is written down. And this is certainly the tradition our yeshiva has from Rav Soloveitchik, who was a master maspid. But in the world in general, in the Torah world in general, you don't really find that that's the practice. You find that most often much less polished, much more just raw feelings, not as much of a filter around it. And there's what to be said for both styles. There's definitely what to be said for both styles. But I just wanted to share some of my impressions. Maybe it will be meaningful to you. Maybe it won't. And then we'll move on to Yerideya Shir after just a few minutes of your indulgence, if you don't mind. First of all, what jumped out at me more than anything else was the emphasis on Rav David's chesed. Meaning, if you were to ask any of us last week, Rav David Feinstein, first word that comes to your mind, Posek, Posek Ador, Posek of America, right? One of the Maspidim said that Rav Eliyashiv used to hold of him as the Posek of America, which makes sense. He was the most recognized Posek in all of America, and people would always turn to him. I remember Rav Shechter on many occasions in the OU office, particularly when it came to a challenging piece in Igros Moshe, where Rav Moshe would be Soser himself, or would seem to be Soser himself, or we had difficulty interpreting what Rav Moshe said. Rav Shechter always said, you have to call Rav David. We have to call Rav David. Rav David was the address. He was the one that that you turned to when things were very, very difficult. So that's the first thing you always think of. But what really emerged from these hespedim was that I don't think that's how Rav David defined himself, or that wasn't what made the greatest impression, at least, on his family. It seemed that the greatest impression was made on his family as a Baal Chesed. Rav David once said about Rav Moshe that he never wasted a minute. Rav Moshe never wasted a minute. But if someone came to talk to him, it's a ki'ilu he had all the time in the world. Whoever it was, it didn't matter. Important person, non-important person, rich or poor, didn't make a difference. Ki'ilu he had all the time in the world for them. And sometimes we admire in others what's true about ourselves. And Rav David admired that about Rav Moshe, that he never wasted a minute, but people would come and talk and he'd have all the time in the world. And that itself, just giving of his time like that, is a tremendous chesed. When you're a person who has so many demands on your time, a person who actually values his time so much, who values learning so much, and to just give of his time to anybody. I was talking to a fellow in my shul over Shabbos, and a regular guy, really nice guy, very smart guy, but a regular guy, and he told me, like, you know, the most amazing thing about Rav David is that you could just walk into MTJ and just schmooze with him for an hour, like, without a problem. Just, he was always there, just walk right in and just sit and schmooze with him for an hour. And this guy said, yeah, I said, you sound like you're talking from experience. He said, yeah, I did it. I must have done that like 15, 20 times. Just walked in and schmoozed with Rav David for an hour. Like, that's mind-boggling. People could, you couldn't get him, it wasn't so easy to get him on the phone, but, you know, much, much easier. You could just walk, and everyone knew that. You could just go to the Lower East Side, walk right in if you were motivated enough, and you could just sit and schmooze. And he gave everybody time. It didn't really matter who you were. And the most amazing thing is that most of us, when we do chesed with other people, we feed off of the hakaras hatov that they show. You know, if people say thank you and people are appreciative, so we feed off of that. One of the things about Rav David's chesed is that the people that sometimes demanded his time were people who were not socially adept and maybe a little bit missed social cues and didn't really understand, and they didn't even realize that he was doing chesed with them. They didn't even realize, so what do you mean? I'm hanging out with my friend, Rav David, you know? And they didn't even realize that was a great chesed that he was doing with them. And to do chesed with such people is a much, much trickier thing. And that's something that was highlighted a lot. I mean, the story that one of the children or grandchildren told that when Art School needed to publish the Shas and they were running low on funds, that he came up with $25,000 and he gave it to them. I think he said, for those who were listening, he said that they were listening to the story. Someone was saying it online on Night Seder America or something, and the Rebbetzin said, oh yeah, I actually know that story. That story is true. So they said, where did he get $25,000 from? She said, oh, that I don't know. I have no idea how he got the money, but it's taka true that he gave $25,000. I mean, that art school needed to borrow $25,000 from Rav David Feinstein is just like mind-boggling. But just the incredible chesed, and to me, the fact that when they asked mechila, you know, it's the minhag that we ask for mechila from a nifter. So normally the mechila is for not showing you enough kavod, for not being there for you when I should have been there for you, for not living up to your values, v'chule v'chule. The mechila that they were asking for was not any of that. The mechila that they asked for, at least the first time they asked for mechila, was for not being kind enough to other people and being makariv other people and giving time to other people the way Rav David would have wanted. Because Rav David just opened himself up to anybody. Anybody who walked in, that's who was. It's an incredible level of chesed, particularly for an Adam Gadol, particularly with someone who has the daigus of Klal Yisrael on his mind. I also found it particularly inspiring that, and this we've seen in the past few months, that they said that when the doctor said to eat on Yom Kippur, or when the doctor said not to daven with a minyan because of his condition, it didn't bother him. I mean, he was like, okay, that's fine. Meaning, he viewed that that's Avodas Hashem. So if my Avodas Hashem, my whole life was to not eat on Yom Kippur, now my Avodas Hashem is that I have to take a drink on Yom Kippur, so I'll take a drink on Yom Kippur. It happens to be, I only spoke to Rav David. I was afraid of Rav David. I was very intimidated by him. Rav David and Rav Reuven are very different personalities. Rav Reuven, like, makes you feel like a best friend whenever you see him. He's like a real chevra man. Rav David was much more reserved, and you can go and ask him anything, but I don't know. I wasn't in his company that often, and when I was always a little bit afraid. But I spoke to him on the phone twice when I had serious shilas. One of them actually related to eating on Yom Kippur. I once had a shila. A woman had matched for a bone marrow transplant with somebody, and they told her that they need to do the transplant on Erev Yom Kippur. and she was nervous that if she does it on Erev Yom Kippur, then she's not going to be able to fast on Yom Kippur. She might be too shvach to fast on Yom Kippur. So this is the donor. The recipient obviously is not going to fast, but the donor would not be able to. She was nervous she wouldn't be able to fast on Yom Kippur, so she asked if she could do, she asked the doctors if she could do it a week earlier. So they said that it won't be as effective a week earlier, but they'll if she says that that's the only way she's going to go through with it, then they'll do it because they don't really have a choice, meaning when you match for bone marrow, it's like a 1 in a million chance of matching, so you often you're the person's only chance of survival. So she wanted to know, what should she do? She said, should I give a week earlier and that way I'll be able to fast on Yom Kippur? Or should I do it when they want and run the risk of not being able to fast on Yom Kippur? So I wasn't sure what to do. So I was telling a friend of mine who was very close with Rav David. He said, this is for Rav David. Let's call Rav David. So he got Rav David on the phone. And I asked Rav David the Shaila. And I said, I have a difficult shaila. So he responded, you don't have a difficult shaila, you have two very easy shailas. I said, okay. He said, easy shaila number one is, should she donate the bone marrow a week earlier when it has less of a chance of saving a life, or a week later when it has more of a chance of saving a life? That's an easy shaila. Of course, you do it when she has more of a chance of saving a life. So that's one simple shaila. Now you have a second shaila. Once a person donates bone marrow on Erev Yom Kippur, does she have to fast on Yom Kippur? Okay, so you're a rabbi, you paskin shailas like that all the time, right? Every year people call in Erev Yom Kippur with shailas about fasting. So you'll make the assessment on that. You don't have a difficult shaila, you have two easy shailas. You just broke it down like that and made it was so simple, I felt so foolish afterwards. But you know, you just broke it down for me just like that, that quickly. The other time was also a medical-related issue that I spoke to Rav David, was a situation where there was a woman in our community who had leukemia, and she was pregnant when she was diagnosed, which was it was a crazy situation. It was a terrible, frightening case, and it was such that, like, doctors were telling me that, who didn't even work in the hospital where she was, were telling me that they heard about that case. Like, it was like this, it became something that people were in the medical community were talking about. How do you start the treatment of the mother and keep the baby alive and keep the baby healthy, or delay the treatment of the mother? Like, they weren't sure exactly how to handle the situation. Baruch Hashem Lemaisa, the baby was born healthy, and then the mother started treatments like very soon after childbirth. Now the baby couldn't have a mila bismana because they took the baby out prematurely, obviously. But so the baby couldn't have a mila bismana, and it turned out that a week after the baby was healthy, which is when you're supposed to do the mila, the mother was still going to be in the hospital undergoing treatment, but she was going to be released from the hospital the next day. The very next day, she was going to be released from the hospital. So they wanted to know if they can delay the bris by one day, so that the mother will be able to attend her own son's bris. This was obviously a very emotional thing for her with everything that she went through. So they wanted to know if they can delay the bris by one day. I remember I called up a Rav to discuss the Shaila, and the Rav said, this is for Rav David. This has to go to Rav David. So I tried Rav David, I got his driver, his assistant, whatever, and he said, I'll be with Rashiv in the car in about an hour from now, or 2 hours from now, I forgot what it was, call me back then. So, I'm not going to go through the whole story, there was a lot of pieces to the story. I spoke to Rav Nata Greenblatt in the interim, and you know, and to the Mayel, and to, you know, so there's a lot of pieces to the story, what happened in Halacha, but by the time I spoke to Rav David, Rav David's Eitza was that they should do the Mila in the right time. And I said, but what about the fact that it's going to be so distressing for the mother? He said, you should be mechaziker and tell her that in the zechus of doing the bris in the right time, she should have a refuah shleima, and the baby should be strong and healthy in the zechus of that mesiras nefesh for this mitzvah. Which happens to be not what we did in the end, because the mayel got a psak from Rav Zelig Epstein, zechron levracha, that he's not allowed to do the bris at that time, because he calculated when the 7 days were up differently, so it was really up the next day. But it happens to be so we did the bris the next day. But lemaisa, that's what Rav David said at the time. So those were the only two times I spoke to him. One of them happened to have been about eating on Yom Kippur, but on both occasions it really speaks to a certain sense of just like yashrus and psak that Rav David has. Like that's what the halacha is, and you know, it doesn't bother me because that's what Hashem wants from me. And even though it may not be the result that I'm looking for, you know, I'd rather not eat on Yom Kippur. But if Hashem wants me to eat on Yom Kippur, then that doesn't bother me. And that was highlighted in the Hespedim that Hashem wants me to not daven with a minyan. So good, so that's my avodas Hashem. It reminded me of the when COVID was at its peak, and all the shuls in Baltimore were shut down. Rav Moshe Brown, one of the great Talmidei Chachamim in the Far Rockaway community, said that he had a friend in Baltimore who hadn't missed minyan in 30 years, not a single minyan in 30 years. So he called up his friend in Baltimore and he said, "How are you doing?" And the friend said, "What do you mean, how am I doing?" He said, "Well, I'm just wondering, like, you haven't missed minyan in 30 years. This must be very difficult for you." And he said, his friend said, "No, it's not difficult for me. Hashem wanted me to daven with a minyan 3 times a day for the last 30 years. Hashem doesn't want me to daven with a minyan right now." So that's it. It's not about keeping the streak alive. It's just about serving the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the sense you got with Rav David, that it was always about just whatever the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted. That's what I do. It speaks to a larger sense of like this total sense of pashtus. That, you know, and that's something that you really see from Lower East Side Jews in general. If you know people from Lower East Side, there's no shtick, there's nothing fancy. There's just like this total sense of just like absolute pashtus. Rav David didn't have any levush, he didn't have anything, you know, any handlers. You walk into the yeshiva, you talk to him. One of the grandchildren said that he feels bad that every time, he said, "I feel like I'm popular because of my grandfather, because everyone wants to talk to me about how do they get into my grandfather, how can they, you know." So he said, "I don't want people nudging you," he told his grandfather. "I don't want people nudging you the whole time. I don't want people bothering you the whole time. So what should I do?" So David said, "What do you mean? Your job is to do chesed. So you let them in, you bring them to me. If I don't have time for them, I'll tell them that I don't have time for them. But your job is to help people out. So of course you help people out." It's like, it wasn't even a question. It's like, there's just like this total sense of pashtus. It's really, how they said Rav David often would just sit in the back of the room and, you know, people would ask him, "Please, Rav Shiva, come to the front." "No, I'm more comfortable sitting with the Talmidim, more comfortable sitting in the back." And it didn't mean anything. The sense of kavod didn't mean anything. I'm sure you all remember from the Sima Shas this past year when Rav Shmuel made the Hadron. I think it was the Hadron. I don't think it was the Aschala. One or the other. I think it was the Hadron. So Rav Shmuel said that really Rav David was supposed to get the Hadron. But Rav David said, "Let Rav Shmuel have it." And Rav Shmuel started by saying that he just wants to show Kar Zatov to Rav David. You know what kind of kavod that is to be giving the Hadron at MetLife Stadium when, you know, there are 80,000 people present and you're the one that's chosen to finish Shas for Klal Yisrael? Didn't mean anything to him. It didn't, the kavod didn't matter. It's not like he was running from kavod. It's just that he wasn't even goreis kavod. It just didn't have any appeal to him. You know, sometimes people are admirable because they run away from kavod, or they don't chase kavod. And then there are some people, very few, that mamsh don't even know what it is. They don't even sense it. They don't even know that it seems ki'ilu, that they don't even know it exists. It's just not even something that enters, you know, that's on their radar at all. And you definitely got that sense with Rav David. I should point out that what may have been lost on a lot of people was how beautiful Rav Shmuel's hesped was. Rav Shmuel spoke for like 30 seconds. First of all, I don't know about you, just seeing Rav Shmuel, you know, first of all, just pop up there and say he's like 96 years old or something. He just like, you know, ki'ilu bounding up to the stage, you know, like, thank God he has, the Ribbono Shel Olam should continue to give him that kind of kavach and that kind of energy. You know, obviously he must have driven in from gotten a ride in from Philadelphia. Just the car ride alone for a man of that age, you would think would take so much out of him. Just seeing him, I thought, was a tremendous nechama for Klal Yisrael to see Rav Shmuel, because you want to know that there are still people like that. It's important to see. So a couple of things about Rav Shmuel's hesped, because it was so brief, but There were two things that were just so amazing about it. First of all, I don't know if you heard, when Rav Shmuel got, again, I apologize for those who didn't see the Levaya because you were misguided by me, but when Rav Shmuel got up to speak, you heard him whisper to the guy, should I speak in Yiddish or should I speak in English? What do people want? So the guy said, English is better. So that was it. So first of all, just that sensitivity. How many times have you been somewhere, see a mashas or elsewhere, we're like, or at a levaya, we're like, I want to speak in the Mamal Lashon, I want to speak in what's best for me. I don't care what the audience is going to. So you'll have thousands of people that don't understand a word that you're saying, but this makes me feel good. This makes me feel frum, you know, to be able to speak like this. So you just want to know what's best. What does the family want? What do you think is best? So just that he asked Rishus. He didn't. I mean, if someone's going to tell Shmuel what to do, would anyone complain? Shmuel Kamenetsky. He could do whatever he wants. But he just asked, what should I do? But then also just that he didn't really say anything. And he said, I don't have anything to say. He said, he essentially said, Rav David is indescribable. He was just geschmack in every which way. Every element of him was geschmack. And I just want everyone to know that I recognize that. There's no way to describe him, and that he was just absolutely geschmack. And then he sat down. And, you know, in certain ways, sometimes when you say very little, it's more powerful than when you say a lot. And that I thought was very, very moving as well. And then one final point to make, and that is Rav Tendler Shlita. First of all, it was so wonderful to see Rav Tendler. You know, he looked Baruch Hashem. He looked great. So it was very comforting to see that also, especially in the aftermath of his recent surgery. But Rav Tendler Shlita started with something that I actually spoke about on Shabbos. And I thought is a critical point to make. Rav Tendler spoke about Akedas Yitzchak, and like we mentioned in Shir the other day from Rav Stein Sefer, that it's called Akedas Yitzchak by Chazal, but the Torah says Ve'elokim Nisa Es Avraham. In the Torah, all the credit is given to Avram, like we pointed out. The Ibn Ezra says he can't imagine that it's true that Yitzchak was 37 years old. He said, how could it be? In Kabbalah hina Kabbalah, if it's a Kabbalah, then I have no choice but to accept it. But how could it be that a 37-year-old man gave himself up to be put on the Mizbeach like that, and we give him zero credit in Torah Shebichsav? Ibn Ezra says it's a misvara, ein zanachon. If it's a misvara, it's not correct at all. It doesn't make any sense. And we suggested that the emphasis in Torah Shebal Peh is on Yitzchak's role, but the emphasis in Torah Shebichsav is on Avraham's role. Perhaps because, and this is what Rabbi Tendler highlighted, that Avraham received the tzivoy directly from the Ribbono Shel Olam, so for him it was ki'ilu Torah Shebichsav, whereas Yitzchak only got the tzivoy through the Chachmei HaMasorah, through Avraham. So for him it was the Torah Shebal Peh. So Yitzchak could have said, I didn't hear it, but Yitzchak represented that idea in carrying on the Masorah, in believing in the Masorah, in believing it, not because I got it directly from Hashem, but for me it's just as good to get it from my father as it is to get it directly from Hashem, if that's what my father gave me. So I was just thinking, and Rabbi Tendler was really making this point, but just to bring it into sharper focus, perhaps, Rav Shechter mentioned in his Parsha Shir on Friday, and this is before Rav David passed away, Rav Shechter just happened to mention about talking about Yitzchak, that very often when you have a person who's extremely creative and innovative and brilliant and, you know, brings ideas into the world that no one ever heard before and, you know, accomplishes a great deal, very often it's equally important, just as important as that person's brilliance and creativity, it's equally important that his memale makom, or often his son, be just straight and just do and not be so creative and not be so innovative, because innovation after innovation, you lose the first innovation, meaning it will be forgotten, it won't be translated over properly. Rav David, you know, so Rav Shecht was saying in the context of Avram and Yitzchak, Avram brought this idea of monotheism and went and taught the world, and Yitzchak was a mekabel the Masorah and kol na David Avram of Yitzchak, whatever Avram did, Yitzchak did. It was about repeat. It was about saying that all those ideas weren't just for Avram's generation. They could be translated to this generation and therefore to every other generation in the future. That's what Yitzchak brought to the table. And Yitzchak, that's Torah Shebal Peh. If Avram was Torah Shebichsav, Yitzchak was Torah Shebal Peh. Yitzchak represents a Masorah. No one questions Yitzchak's place among the Chachmei HaMasorah, among the Avos. Right? Obviously, Yitzchak was one of the three Avos, and we don't question that at all, even though the Torah Shebichsav doesn't give him quite as much credit, because that was the role, to take all the creativity and the energy and all that Avram brought and just keep it and hold on to it and make it something that's sustainable for the future. And that the parallel to Rav David is striking. Rav Moshe was, Rav Shechter talks about this a lot, but a lot of people don't talk about it. Rav Moshe was a tremendous mechadesh. It wasn't just Stam that he paskened halachos. He viewed sugyas in an entirely different way than other people did. He said chidushim and sugyas and paskin based on them. You read the Igros Moshe, like one tshuva after another is a chidush nifla, and sometimes the chidushim were so great and sometimes so complicated that when shailas come up in our generation, we're not really sure how to apply what Rav Moshe said. We're not always 100% sure, what do we do with this Igros Moshe? What do we do with this comment of Rav Moshe? And for that, we had Rav David. Rav David was as straight of a posek as you could possibly imagine. Just, he didn't produce an Igros Moshe. Happens to be, Vidibarta Bam is a very nice sefer written by a Talmud where every piece ends off with, and Rav David said like this, but most of them is just Rav David explaining Rav Moshe Shita. Rav David was the one that we go to, like I mentioned before, when Rav Shechter had a question in Igros Moshe, he said, we got to call Rav David. He's the one to be trusted. He's the one that you know understood Rav Moshe better than anybody else. He didn't leave Rav Moshe's side. He was, Rav Reuven learned in Tells, and Rav David was by Rav Moshe. That was it. He was the one that was best able to carry forward that Mesorah. And I think that's the point Rabbi Tendler Shlita was trying to highlight at the beginning, at least at the beginning of his Hesped, that Yitzchak doesn't get enough credit. There's no doubt that Rav David was one of the Poskei Hador. There's no doubt. But the style of that psak, of that koach, was one of just absolute pashtus and yashrus, and being able to take Rav Moshe and translate Rav Moshe for the coming generations. And perhaps one could argue that the Igros Moshe would not be appreciated as much as it is if not for the fact that Rav David was there to tell us how to appreciate it and to play that role of Yitzchak Avinu in creating that sense of Masorah. So that's just a few thoughts in the aftermath of the Levaya. I apologize for taking time from Shir to do that. I'm just sharing what's on my mind. But Be'ez Hashem, we should see no more losses in Klal Yisrael like the crippling losses we saw over the weekend. Be'ez Hashem, maybe there'll be another time where we'll be able to talk about it's a totally separate kind of person, kind of leader. So Be'ez Hashem, there will be another time maybe where we'll be able to talk about Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sachs, Zichrono Livracha, as well. I just wanted to share those thoughts about Rav David. Okay.